It's 4th of July weekend. We wanted to pad the Cyclone Fanatic Podcast Network with a handful of podcasts for you all. So here we are, episode 2 of the 2019 Sioux Cup Summer Series. I'm Chris Williams, joined as always by the Brent Bloom, as we are here to celebrate America. And we're also celebrating what will be 10 years at Cyclone Fanatic coming up in July or August.
Crazy.
Wild. Makes me feel old.
That's nearly a third of your life spent at this place.
But there's so much more that led up to that.
For sure.
For both of us. And that's kind of what today's podcast is going to be about. Not us. We're chronicling the, well, not chronicling, but we're discussing, right, whatever you want to call it, the history of Cyclone Media. Take it as you will.
And you won't realize how much an impact media, will leave that term as it is, has an impact on Iowa State sports. But I think by the end of this, you'll be like, whoa, that is a major cog in the wheel that makes Iowa State athletics go.
Before we dig into this conversation, we do want to thank our friends at Sioux Cup Manufacturing. If you need a grain bin, don't wait any longer. The farmers who get the top dollar for their crop are the ones with on-farm storage. Store now, profit later. Give your local Sioux Cup dealer a call today. Unfortunately, I've been around Southwest Iowa a lot lately. And what's incredible, now that I'm really on the lookout for it, is the number of Sioux Cup grain bins you see around the great state of Iowa. They are everywhere.
I'm going up to Northwest Iowa for the 4th, and I'm going to count them. I'm going to end up.
You're going to get really bored because you're going to be counting a lot.
It's like the license plate game.
Don't do that. Count the Watch grain the bins. Road.
Yeah. That's true if I'm driving.
Yeah, like that sounds like a really bad plan.
All right, I'll have my wife do that then.
Now, we thank them for sponsoring the Sioux Cup Summer Series for the second year in a row. And this is a topic that is near and dear to our hearts. We've been lucky, most of the time lucky, I would say, to have a front row seat to a lot of this as media has evolved. I will say this, and I think it's a good place to start. So Jeremy Lind is the originator of Cyclone Fanatic. Mm-hmm. He's not really around the company much anymore. I do see he dabbles on the forums from time. I haven't seen Jeremy in years.
Same.
If he's listening. I used to have lunch with him from time to time. But the genesis of our group taking Cyclone Fanatic, or purchasing it and turning it into a media outlet, was a group of Iowa State fans fed up with the lack of coverage. At the end of the day, I mean, that's the easiest way to put it.
Yep.
And that's kind of where I came into the mix. I had started a little bit with Scout and Rivals, done all of that. But, man, there's so much more that happened before 2009. And that's Bloom, you're the perfect guy to start this because you grew up really – I grew up with the Omaha media, and it didn't matter. We didn't have the internet.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't watch local Des Moines television. It was all Omaha. If you wanted to follow Iowa State, it was impossible. Southwest Iowa.
Were they on TV stations? Like, you know, Iowa State used to be on the Raycom or the ESPN.
Iowa regional. Was on Raycom.
Yeah, or Iowa was on Raycom. Iowa State had similar type.
We could watch Iowa.
On WOI.
We, for a while, and then there was a mix-up. Now, right now, Channel 5, you can get down there, but for a good chunk of my childhood, you could not. Because I actually, in preparing for this, I reached out to Keith Murphy.
Oh, okay.
Who a lot of people, who probably listen to Murph and Andy and watch Sound Off, don't realize he used to actually call Iowa State basketball games in the Cyclone Television Network.
And he did a couple of football games, too.
He did. He did Cy-Hawk games for ABC.
Absolutely. I watched it. So, Keith, I watched it when I was like 8.
I didn't know that until really like probably 5-6 years ago.
So let's start there. And I think, you know, as modern as media has gotten, back in the day it was super unsophisticated and really random. So let's start in the 70s and 80s. And back then...
Take us there, Professor Bloom.
There were really no TV or radio contracts. There were no exclusivity rights for radio stations and TV stations. So essentially, if you wanted to cover the game, you could go cover the game. We both worked at KMA Radio in Shenandoah. For years, KMA would send people to the Iowa State game.
I believe Warren Swain
would do that.
He was once the sportscaster of the year.
So these, you know, schools, they did not have a play-by-play guy. They literally had dozens of local radio stations that would all set up shop at... you know, what it was Cyclone Stadium at the time, or Kinnick Stadium at the time, or Carver Hawkeye, or Hilton Coliseum. If you wanted to, and you had the, and I'm sure they charged them a fee of some sort, but if you wanted to broadcast the game, you could go broadcast the game. Similarly for TV. For a while, there was no exclusive. There were times where Iowa State games were covered by both, and it was rare because they weren't on national TV really at all, covered by ESPN plus the local. So they did not have this, you know, entity that controlled media rights. It was really kind of a free-for-all. If you wanted to cover it, you could come cover it. And that's kind of the interesting start of, you know, college sports was really small. And professional sports were also, I mean, media-wise, it was not sophisticated at all. It was just kind of an afterthought, media rights were. It was like, well, if you want to cover it, sure, we'll take the extra, you know, interest in our program, but it was not controlled from a central outlet like a conference or like the school. So it was a different time. It was a really simple time. So that's why, like Pete Taylor, Iowa State eventually consolidated a little quicker than Iowa did, I think. But
they did. Iowa was the last holdout in the Big Ten, because the only reason I know that is Scott Docterman just wrote that piece about it in The Athletic.
Yeah, so you know, eventually Pete Taylor was kind of the one voice, and he was at a 1350 KRNT.
So he was the first voice of the Cyclones.
Yes.
When it came together.
When it first came together, and this was, I think, the late 70s.
So we've only had two. Taylor and John Walters.
Essentially, yeah. I mean, that just the solo guys, absolutely. But it was, the point being, it was a really simplified version of how those media rights works, and it's completely changed, and college sports has changed with it.
I read in that Docterman piece, to show a difference in the financial aspect of this,
yep,
something like Iowa was charging those stations each like $50,000 a year,
okay,
and they could broadcast every game. If you think about that compared to today's money.
And I think Iowa State had really two or three.
Yeah.
I mean,
probably KMA.
It was KMA. It was KRNT, I think.
Yeah.
Or eventually became KRNT. And then Ames, KSI, I think, covered some too.
I wouldn't be surprised. Maybe Fort Dodge did every once in a while.
When I grew up, and let's just kind of move this along here. When I grew up, Iowa State was not on TV very much. Like, you had to listen to the radio, and that was Pete Taylor on 1350, and or when basketball wise they had a couple of games on Channel 5 and then kind of that Big 12 network, which was really just you know, that ESPN Plus package. But Iowa State did not make much money on that. Let's throw it back to even 2000, which wasn't that long ago. Iowa State from the Big 12 conference, which includes the media rights, made roughly $3.5 million from media rights.
Which is just, I mean, now they're upwards of $30
million. Now
north of that.
Yeah, it's way north of that. Yeah, yeah. I mean, media rights, the Big 12 as a whole, I think next this year will be over $40
million. Yeah.
Media rights is probably, you know, 75% of that or more. But back in 2000, I mean, the main driver for media was really to try and get interest in your program if from an Iowa State perspective. So that was to drive ticket sales. Ticket sales was the biggest part of the budget. Now it's really a small potatoes compared to the media rights. And so I think the media landscape has altered the way college sports operate completely. It's a totally different ballgame than even in 2000. Yeah, so back in the 90s, it was you listen to Pete Taylor. Iowa State would be on TV for football, usually against Iowa and Nebraska. And that wasn't even always the case. And you just listened to the radio. And Iowa State, radio-wise, was controlled by the Cyclone Radio Network, which was the name of it, but it was really an entity out of Des Moines that eventually became Clear Channel. So that's actually what Eric Heft did for a living, mm-hmm. And still kind of does that as well. Is he sold the sponsorships for the network.
So that was based out of the same building that I go to every day with KXNO,
yeah,
correct?
Eventually, so
well, not the exact same building, but they were all, like,
they
that
were,
group
they
was
were
all together.
Yeah, so this, now we're talking, we're going late 90s into the early 2000s. And then Clear Channel would eventually become, well, it didn't become that, but Learfield Sports would purchase Iowa State's rights, and then that eventually turned into Learfield IMG in the past year. So how that has changed. So back in 2000, you know, Iowa State would get probably less than $1 million or so from Clear Channel to have the radio, and then the TV package as well was included in that. And that was not Clear Channel, but total was about $1 million. So now what Iowa State does is they package the rights to the Tier 3 rights, is what we know them as, but that also includes for Learfield is radio, so the Cyclone Radio Network, Cyclones TV, all the in-stadium and in-arena signage. Learfield controls all of that. So if you notice, if you're in there and you're hearing or you're watching on Cyclones TV, it's very similar advertisements because that's how they market this thing. And so what happened is in about 2006 or so, Learfield approaches Iowa State and said, we will pay you a specific number a year to be able to control all of your rights for your third tier that aren't covered by the conference. That ends up, it started out about $2.5 million a year. It's now grown to close to $6 million for those
tier
three rights.
Is what Learfield pays
Iowa State. And then Learfield then controls all of those entities. So Cyclones TV ads, Cyclone Radio Network, and the in-arena stuff.
Yeah,
so they control all of the corporate, the marketing parts of Iowa State Athletics.
I would guess, too, that the signage is probably the biggest thing.
Yeah, I'd
be curious. If you think about it, like,
as far as, yeah,
like, I mean, how much money is Pioneer paying to have their logo on Hilton Coliseum?
Great question. So, but that
Mid-American Energy, we just saw that with the stadium.
That just goes to show. So in 2000, Iowa State made less than $1 million off of all that stuff. Now it's up closer to six. So this is the growth we're talking about of just Cyclone Radio Network, just Cyclones TV, that third-tier stuff. And that doesn't even include the Big 12.
The Big 12 has been fascinating. I've probably spent too much time in my 35 years following the not only the realignment, but the television contracts, mm-hmm. The lack of a Big 12 network and all the drama that's come with it. I think you can make an argument that I always think the Big 12 network and the Longhorn network argument, it's one of the more fascinating ones in sports to me because there's so much ire towards the Longhorn network, yet without it, I think there's a strong case that the Big 12 in its current form does not exist. I don't think Iowa State is in the Big 12 if the Longhorn network didn't exist.
Look at what Connecticut's doing right now.
Yeah.
There is a strong possibility if, and again, Iowa State's not Connecticut, there's a little more size to Iowa State and, you know, more of a brand, I think, in a way. But Connecticut is in talks of either dropping out of FBS, mm-hmm. or maybe completely dropping their football program because their inclusion in, they never got into a big Power Five. Then they went to the American, and now they're like, this is awful. We don't want to be here. It ruined our entire basketball program. We need to go back to the Big East where we had it good.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the problem with that is that's not a football.
Correct.
So now you're
with the Villanovas and Georgetowns and Seton Halls.
Exactly. So that's and for them, maybe that's best for them. But that's how it's funny. If you look at Iowa State's budget, it turned a sharp corner at the realignment crisis. So in the end, Iowa State has benefited, I mean, exponentially over what happened.
It's the haves and the have-nots.
It is.
And luckily, Iowa State was one of the haves.
Completely. Because if it goes the other way, I don't know.
I'm not doing this.
I don't know what happened. No, it's...
I remember the wife and I had just gotten married, and I think I've told this. I don't want this to turn into a realignment podcast.
No, but it literally, it goes hand in hand because yeah. the media was the reason why the Big 12 stayed in its current form.
I do remember saying to my wife, she didn't pay attention to any of this, and I do remember saying to this, if this goes the wrong way, I'm likely going to need to find another job.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not immediately,
mm-hmm.
but you could see if Iowa State's in the Mountain West, there's a lot of things that are going to be changing around here.
So even back in 2000, as early as 2006, Iowa State had four games on TV.
Yeah.
And one of them was on MC22.
Seriously?
Yeah. That wasn't that long ago.
No. The MC22 game, was that the in 2006 UNLV?
That,
where there was
no.
Like the fight?
That game was, no, it was the Toledo game.
Oh, the Toledo, the opener. Opener. Yeah.
Yep. 45-43
triple overtime. I was a sideline
reporter. That's right.
I was a sideline reporter in that game.
Yeah, but I mean, that was coming off Iowa State had made back-to-back bowl wins, so it's not like Iowa State was a bad program. That's the reason they weren't on TV. They're just, the inventory wasn't there, and it was a free-for-all still. And the Big 12 contract at the time is you got paid if you were on TV. And so Texas and Nebraska, and that's the reason why Nebraska got fed up eventually, is it was tiered. So if you were on TV, national TV, more like your Texas and Oklahoma and Nebraska.
Nebraska had it good back in
the day. They did. You got way more money than your Iowa States of the world that weren't on national TV as much. Think about that. 2006, four of the 11 or 12 games were nationally televised. That's it.
The Big 12, what was interesting at the time, they were the only league that didn't split media rights equally among schools, correct?
Yes.
So Texas, let's just throw out an arbitrary number, was making $14 million a year.
Off of TV.
Yeah.
Yep.
Where Kansas and Iowa State were making three.
Three. Yep.
And that's just how the conference operated.
And that might be a little bit exaggerated, but
it's not far off.
It's not far off.
I know it's not far off, because I do remember going through those numbers back in the day, and that the Texas and Nebraska, I always remember those two were the highest.
Yeah.
This was really right when Oklahoma was becoming a national power. I want to say maybe.
They would have won it, but but Texas and Nebraska
were still
the
two biggest
brands.
Yeah. In the conference.
But that's why the media rights were such a big deal, because ever since 2010 is when that hit, and the Big 12 got the guarantee from ESPN and Fox that they were going to sign this, what was it at the time, a 13-year, I don't remember what exactly the length of the contract was.
It was a 13-year grant of rights.
That saved, it provided stability, one, but then revenue-wise, it's like, boom, explosion. And if you market for Iowa State, so 2010, Iowa State's budget was like close to $40, $45 million, somewhere in that neighborhood. Now it's north of $85 million. Almost. So ticket sales, yes, they've gone up. Fundraising has gone up quite a bit. But the majority of it is the media rights. And like I said, this year Iowa State's going to get $40 million from the Big 12, and that's $6 to $7 million from the Tier 3. So there's $47 million of around the $85 million budget that is based on
media alone,
conference affiliation, and media. Yeah,
crazy. So let's talk about the other stuff because this is where I think is the most interesting thing that doesn't really get talked about a lot, and that's just the evolution of the rest of the media. Mm-hmm. That covers Iowa State. When I say evolution isn't always for the better. I remember when we were in college, you know, and we were both aspiring. I wasn't really an aspiring sports journalist. I wanted to be in NASCAR. Like,
okay.
That was really
that was
what I was wanting to get some licks broadcasting, but I never ventured out to be a Cyclone fan site guy because there was really only two websites at the time. There was CycloneNation.com.
Which was pretty new.
Yeah. And it was the smaller
of
the
two. It was more
of
a magazine with a message board.
Correct. Yeah. And then there was Paul Clark's CycloneReport.com, which is still around today.
Yep. Which originated, again, as a message board, and it eventually rivals in the content. Yeah.
Yeah.
And still going on today.
I remember at those days, the Ames Tribune, the local newspaper there, they had at least four, I think five, sports writers.
On the staff.
I think at the time.
Yep. Well, at least two that were dedicated.
They had a wrestling beat writer.
Yeah.
I remember him.
Yep.
They had
two that were at every single press conference.
Yeah, and then they had
maybe
two
three.
Preps.
Yeah.
They had two or three
guys.
Preps.
Yep.
I remember with the Des Moines Register.
So you're talking 04 to 07.
03 to 07.
Somewhere in there.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Des Moines Register probably had at least twice the amount of its sports staff that it does, probably more. I have not crunched the numbers, but the crunch
they had a horse racing and women's basketball guy.
Yeah. Think about that.
That was his...
And those women's basketball writers, like, traveled some, mm-hmm. too. Like, they, I don't think mm-hmm. they went to every game.
Nope, but...
But they went to a lot of them.
Dan Johnson.
And then Scott Nolf did it for the Ames Tribune.
Yep, he was at a lot of road games. That's a good point.
Back in the day. The wrestling coverage was huge. Dick. What was Dick's last name? I remember him. And then the Register had their iconic wrestling reporter.
Yep.
Yet when we would go to a press conference, so let's go. I took my first job at Cyclone Nation for Scout. So Steve Dace was my boss. And John Narcisse, believe it, God rest his soul.
Yep. Those are the two.
Yeah.
They found, how did they find you? Do you remember that?
Because
you and I both had a column in the Iowa State Daily.
Yeah.
I think I had Thursdays and you had Tuesdays. And at first we hated each other.
We did. My first beat with the Iowa State Daily was the sports clubs. My first published story was about the Municycling Club. Not unicycling, Municycling. These imbeciles.
You started deep.
They would go out into the woods and unicycle. Swear to God. That was my first beat.
Quick detour. The junior college defensive back who got in trouble, he pushed over a unicyclist. Josh Hargis. You remember that story?
I remember the union?
Like down the stairs in the union.
How could I forget that? Yep. That was one of the guys I was covering. I'm kidding. My second beat was golf, men's golf.
Wow.
Which actually was a terrible beat. The coach was really mean. Like, it was a good learning opportunity. Yeah. I'll put it that way. And then, started doing the column, and Amanda Overson was a beat writer. So
okay.
she had been one of my editors at the Iowa State Daily.
Right.
She went on to work for Scout, and
that's right.
She kind of got me hooked up with Dace and that crew, and they hired me basically on the spot. I remember driving down to Des Moines with no clue what I was getting into.
Right.
And I met with John Narcisse. And see, the one thing I had going for me was I was a recruiting junkie.
You liked it.
I was obsessed with it.
Yeah.
And
you were going to...
I was going to cover the hell out of recruiting. Yeah. And I had to write like 5 recruiting pieces a week. Like it was very set, like what they wanted from me.
Mm-hmm.
But I loved that aspect from it. I remember my Uncle Dick, when I was growing up, he would get that Voice of the Hawkeye newspaper that would come to your door.
And Iowa State had something similar called Cyclone Illustrated. Which was Bill Seals and... I don't know if Paul Clark was involved in that. But anyway, something similar.
It's called Cyclone Illustrated.
Yeah, it's called Cyclone Illustrated, yeah.
So that's how I got involved with that in 2004. And it was at that point where I decided I never wanted to work for a newspaper, mm-hmm. really, because I...
You like the immediacy and the...
Yeah, I mean, basically back then, though, like your Twitter was your message board.
Yeah, no, Twitter wasn't around.
You know, that's
social media wasn't around.
But there were enough diehard Cyclone fans who would pay $5 a month or whatever, where it was a very vibrant community, which you see every day right now on Cyclone Fanatic.
For sure.
But it was...
It was
very appealing to me as a young man.
And there was some payoff right away. Like, you jumped in and you're producing content, which when you're, sophomore, junior in college, like, this is cool.
Yes.
And you're going to press conferences, you're doing some of that stuff, but still there was a stigma to the internet guy.
There was a huge stigma against us.
Oh, completely.
Especially a young, probably arrogant punk like
me. Which you were. Yeah. No, that's absolutely true.
Well, I do know basically me and you just happened to be affiliated with me.
Yeah, you hired me as I read some of the stuff I wrote back in like 05 and 06, and it's just embarrassing.
I hired all you guys.
Yeah.
I hired Chris Peters, who now works for ESPN.
Yep.
I was his first editor.
Yep. But I wrote a column for you, and I just cringe. I still have some of the old magazines. Well, do you.
Yeah.
And for Cycle Nation. Like,
they're embarrassing.
What am I doing? What am I even doing here? But we were like, yeah, this is great. Like, we can go to press conferences, and we can kind of get credentialed, but it was still... We were looked sideways from the traditional folks. Now, a lot of the Des Moines media was great and still are, and some of the same people, but you were still like, all right, what are these kids doing?
What are they doing?
Yeah.
Why do they belong here?
Coaching staffs too.
Dan McCarney looked down upon me a lot, and Mac and I are still we're buddies to this. We're fine.
Yeah,
I don't want to say we're buddies. No, we're fine.
Yeah,
but there were some really hard times between me and Mac back in the day.
For sure. I mean, this is
he did not hold back about his thoughts about the. There's a lot of vulgarities that Mac would use in associating with me. Wet between the ears, you know, that type of deal. And frankly, I don't blame him. Here's this guy who's turned this program around, and then you've got these 20-year-olds who are calling for me to be fired.
Yeah, the internet at that time was still kind of, you know, the wild, wild west.
Nobody got it,
and you couldn't figure out, okay, so you're a message board, but yet you kind of write some articles, and what exactly are you? I mean, we're talking the MySpace world, like, really?
Facebook didn't exist.
Facebook wasn't really there yet. I mean, it was just in its genesis, but you couldn't post anything. It was really just whatever Facebook, the start of it was. And you're trying to cover Iowa State like you're like a combo. You're doing the newspaper, but you're on Steve Dace's radio show quite a bit. And
that was foreign to everybody, too.
Yeah, so it was just the sports talk, opinion-based content. And really, newspapers at the time, you had your beat writer. And then they had two or three columnists at the Register that kind of swung the big clubs around there, too. So if they were going to bring in the big guns, it'd be Keeler or I think Mark Hansen was there.
I still think it's a grave mistake that
Nancy
newspaper
Clark
made by going with the columnists with the teams.
Well, so that's...
I still think that's a mistake, but I think they reacted to guys like us.
That's exactly what happened. So what... This is, you know, 506, and you start to build a little bit of an audience because the message board community is really organic. And
well, there's a community. That's the biggest thing. There's
right
a community
on.
Where we give, and it exists to this day, and it's my favorite thing about Twitter is, like, I can give back to the readers, and they give to me, and it's like we're friends.
But yet, at this time, from an Iowa State perspective, they still need your TV stations and newspaper first and foremost, because those drive numbers, right? They don't care about you yet. You're just you're an annoying pest.
Not like, only did they dislike me, they didn't want us around.
Because you take up time and space from the people that they want there, which was the traditional media, because that's the people who are going to drive traffic, drive ticket sales. And again, like I went back to, that was the revenue for Iowa State. So your media relations folks,
they hated us.
Well, their job was to cultivate stories in the media so that the Iowa State could get coverage. Now it's changed a lot. I mean, that's part of what they do now, but really, they are the content creators a lot.
Well, and back then, though, to compare it to like modern day, it was a little bit like a authoritarian society.
Completely.
With the media relations, right? Because they didn't like the fact that all of a sudden these fans had this spot to go congregate and sometimes spread false rumors.
Right.
And they didn't know this punk who was running it. And Clark to the same, like, I mean, I'm sure they respected Clark a lot more than they did me because he was so much older.
Yeah, and he had more of a traditional
background. He had been around, and a lot of the boosters were on his board and everything. But, to wrap it back around to the big picture, I remember being at those press conferences and it was me, it was Paul Clark, and it was either whoever was on the Cyclone beat for the Register, which is either Andrew Logue at the time or Randy Peterson. They would flop every 2 years. And then when Dave Sproul graduated, he
Ames radio station.
There was somebody from the Ames radio station and somebody from the Tribune. Now, if you go to a practice, a spring practice, there's 20 damn dudes in there.
Yeah, and the growth of coverage really, it goes parallel with the growth of Iowa State. And is that what is it, the chicken or the egg there? And I think, you know, that's kind of the fun conversation to have. But as Iowa State's success has gone up, the coverage has increased. And if you really look at Cyclone Fanatics' arc, that is Iowa State's arc from an interest standpoint and a success standpoint in large respects, too. I'm not saying the Cyclone Fanatic is responsible for the success of Iowa State, because there's many other factors that are bigger than that. But I do think that the community feel was a big reason why Iowa State has steadily increased, and now they have a 61,500-seat stadium. Do they do that without Cyclone Fanatic? Maybe, but I think that was a big help of really having an outlet for Iowa State that says, this is us. And now look around. Iowa State, I think statewide, probably gets close to 50-50 coverage. I mean, it's...
Oh, I think so, too. You know, to answer your deal on why there's more reporters, I think this is a fascinating conversation to have. And let me get a little bit political here, but okay. I do think that there should be some sort of government subsidy to keep local news outlets afloat, because this is the problem I see, like, with what the Register's doing now. So, like, should you cover things based off of traffic and chasing revenue, or right. should the city, like, in what's going on, dictate what your coverage is? Because, like, to me, like, the Iowa Barnstormers just had a playoff game,
mm-hmm.
and the Register didn't cover it.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right or wrong? Well, from a business standpoint, back in the day, they put out the Sunday paper, the Big Peach is what they call it.
Okay.
And people may not have been reading about the Drake softball team, but they didn't know, because there wasn't a thing called a click.
Yeah.
Now, they've covered enough Barnstormer games to know that there's just not that much interest in it. So they ignore it. Well, that's not for the betterment of the community,
mm-hmm.
in my opinion. But I also can't blame the people at Gannett and the Register, because their staff's been cut in half, and they have to make a living and put food on the table too. So I think what you've seen when there's 20 reporters there now is people have seen that, well, they're going to click on this, but they're probably not. We're not going to get as many clicks on covering the Johnston softball team, right? I'm a believer that the Johnston softball team still should be covered by the Des Moines Register.
Yeah.
But I don't necessarily blame them either. I think it's a fascinating conversation. And again, like, I don't want people to take that too far.
No.
I don't think that our taxpayer money should be funding all these things, but I do think community journalism is still very important, and it's going to continue to take more of a hit.
Let's get back to that, but let's go back to, so, 2009. You're working at KMA Radio.
Yes.
The fan site, that independent fan site, was almost a non-thing, okay? So in order to survive, to follow an Iowa State, in Iowa, a Big 12 school, you had to be affiliated at the time with Rivals or Scout, I think, right? Those were the two.
Yeah,
the two
247 wasn't there yet.
247, but you had to have that subscription model.
Correct.
Where people are paying $7 to $10 a month to get the scoops.
Yes.
And yet, you get a call, you're working, you're doing well, because I worked with you for a year at KMA. Good place to be.
It was a safe job.
Yep.
I could have made way better money there.
Yep. And you were, you know, borderline married or getting married.
Ashley had a job lined up in Red Oak.
And these folks that you didn't really know call you and say, we're sick and tired. So this is 09.
Yeah.
This is when Iowa still got, you know, the heft of the coverage. I think it's changed, and we'll get into that here. But, and I was the same boat. It's like, come on. Like, the Register is constantly in the TV stations. It's like, always covering Iowa. It's like Iowa State. It's like, oh, well, they're, you know, if they do something well, then okay, we'll give them a.
It truly was little brother.
It was. Yeah. Completely.
And it
absolutely.
Didn't matter how many times in a row Mac won that game either. I mean, that changed the narrative a little bit, but.
It was still, Iowa State was still, you know, it was the small potatoes to the main meal in the media's mind. And I think so that the genesis of Fanatic came from that place.
It
and
did.
You get a call.
That's where I was down. At the Lake of the Ozarks, and I was fishing. I had already met with one guy who's one of my dear friends to this day. So I kind of figured that we were going to have some sort of a conversation, but I didn't think it would be of the full-time nature. And
because you had gotten out of Cyclone Nation, so that kind of fizzled out.
I quit Cyclone Nation. I actually quit Cyclone Nation my senior year of college for a lot of reasons.
Mm-hmm.
But I went and worked at the Ames Tribune for a while.
Okay.
I was doing recruiting coverage for them.
And that was the safer job.
Yeah, at the time.
I mean, a traditional job. Didn't you interview for, like, the paper in Newton?
I interviewed at the Ames Tribune. the Newton paper, and my favorite one that turned me down was the Knoxville radio station. I couldn't get a job anywhere.
Knoxville, yeah.
Yeah, I couldn't get a job anywhere. KCCI, the Register, none of those places would even return a call. So, yeah, it was really...
But you're the Cyclone guy, kind of. Like, you're not...
That was the only, only thing I had on my resume was being the fan site guy.
Yep. Which it is like, okay, you might as well just be a blog.
So I get this call, and the guys had they'd followed me briefly or whatever during my time at Scout. And the one thing that I was just scary enough to think that this might work was I was more of a scholar of like media than I was the Cyclones.
Sure.
I always have been. It's not anything against Iowa State. I'm fascinated by new trends and, you know, like I could do the whole, like, what should newspapers responsibility to society thing. Like I could have that conversation for days. Mm-hmm. Like that's the stuff that fascinates me. Mm-hmm. And we as a team looked at this thing and we're like, exactly what you're talking about. And we saw all these areas of opportunity, what we're doing right now, podcasting being one of them, that nobody was doing. Mm-hmm. Absolutely nobody was doing it. And we liked the free model. Jeremy had developed a nice community, which gave us a head start that we already had, you know, 5,000-6,000 people.
That were on the site.
Yeah, and that's since grown to like 20-25 on a daily basis. When news happens, sure, we'll be upwards of 50. We'll have about 50,000 people or so listen to this podcast.
Crazy.
Right now. And we just went for it. It was a scary time, but we believed in a couple of things. One, the decline of traditional media,
which
saw
really
the writing on the wall there.
Accelerated.
Scared the hell out of you to be a traditional media guy. And two, the free model. Now, that's since kind of come back around where I think subscription is kind of
With the Athletic and...
Yeah, there's a lot that goes into it that I don't want to bore people with, but when it comes to CPMs and whatnot, like that... But I still like our business model. More importantly, though, is the way we're viewed could not be more different.
Right.
We, back in the day, so when we... You're 2009, get the call. I decide I'm going to move up.
Do it full-time.
We're going to do this full-time. I'm going to eat a lot of ramen noodles. I'm taking
Your wife was in vet school, right?
My wife was in school. I took like a $16,000 pay cut and lost my 401k and all that stuff to come up and start this thing. And get an email back from Iowa State that day that we've been denied press credentials. They weren't going to let us cover the game because we didn't belong to...
The traditional
media. Like a traditional media.
Right. You needed, at the time, they had a rule. Like, you needed an editor, you needed a...
Yeah.
There was some sort of formality there.
Now, luckily, I had been at Iowa State, I had covered Iowa State for long enough where I had some allies in the athletic department who vouched for me. And that was the biggest thing. And they came to my defense and said, okay, this guy's legit. This guy and what they're trying to do, he's doing it full time. And now that's the deal. Like, if you want to do it, if you want to cover games, if you want to be credentialed, this has to be your full-time job, okay. Which I think that our site probably had a lot to do with.
Yeah, for sure. So this is 2009. And again, it's, you know, your medias, your newspapers, your TV stations and radio. That was, and you had your established sites like Cyclone Report.
Mm-hmm.
And the Scout site was still around at the time, but
I think Twitter really killed those subscription sites.
Well, and right. So again, Twitter was brand new, and that's the thing. Like, to watch news or to get news, it was still you're waiting for the 10 o'clock news, or you're getting it the next morning in the paper. Yeah, DesMoinesRegister.com was around, but you weren't driving a whole lot of numbers there. And social media was so new that, I mean, the scoops that you got, you know, you had to be a subscriber or you had to wait until the story came out, and it could be that night or, you know, days later.
Well, and the demographic changing is huge. I mean,
right. But
people die.
Fnatic hit at almost the perfect time from a media standpoint because you were able to take risks but had established enough that people would follow along. And it's crazy to me that you look at what you did then, and now the traditional media has almost flipped back around to cover teams like fan sites. Which
I think is a vast mistake that they're doing.
I would agree, but if you look at some, even in the state of Iowa here, it's strange the type of coverage the schools can get now. And I don't blame the reporters that do it because that's what gets the numbers.
I get it. I don't blame Randy Peterson. And I just think like the one thing that where I just thought like, man, they missed was when the Big 12 missile crisis was going on. Like our paper was the only one that wasn't down covering that.
Which is crazy.
And yeah. You know what I mean? Like, in my opinion, that might be the single biggest story in the history of Iowa State athletics.
Yeah.
Honestly, because if that goes the other way, it's over.
Yep.
It's over. Like, this whole thing is done.
Yep.
And I just remember at the time being like, man, like,
we're missing
you got to be more invested in this thing. And it wasn't, again, I don't want to blame anybody. It's not the reporter's fault, I can tell you that. So if you're all like, oh, he threw Randy Peterson under the bus. No, I'm absolutely not. Whoever is his boss at the time, and whoever is that guy's boss writing the check, that's who was to blame.
So what do you think was the biggest key for Fnatic from your perspective? Because you were a one-man shop. Like, it was you. I mean, I was helping you out a little bit. I'd write a column every now and then. I had a day job, and I still do. Like, I don't do – some people, oh, you write for – no, I have a day job and just kind of help out freelance with some other things. But
I think it was two things. I think it was one, Jason Luch, our owner, our ownership team, there's four of us. We were in the parentheses there for a long time, and we were patient with it because we believed in what we were doing.
For those non-business folks, you were losing money.
We were losing money.
Yeah.
Two is I think that we – because of our, we didn't have this bureaucracy ahead of us, on top of us, right? We were independent and we were quick. We could make quick decisions. And I think the fact that social media came around and became as prevalent as it was for media at the time, we didn't have to have six board meetings to make a decision on how we wanted to use Twitter. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was literally me in my apartment in Urbandale.
Yep.
And that was it. I mean, Jason and those guys, they didn't really ever question me. We just did it. And I think that being lean was our biggest advantage at the time. And I didn't have to cover I didn't have to cover if, you know, the backup defensive lineman was underage at a bar.
Yeah.
I didn't waste my time with that. I was covering what people wanted to read because we weren't doing hard journalism. And I think that freed me up to do more recruiting. I mean, that's really where it started. We were breaking recruiting stories.
Yep.
We were the first to really use Twitter and start breaking news on Twitter, feeding it back to the website. And it valued the brand. It built the brand's value up more than it necessarily did the numbers on the website. But I think that all is paying off today.
Yep. And you were, I mean, you're not going to give yourself credit, but I will, but you were one of the pioneers in that regard of using social media. And now all the main sites do that, right? Like your national sites or everything. You know, for a while, ESPN would not put their proprietary stuff on social media.
No.
Now they do. I mean, now they have Woj, who's dropping bombs all over the place. But you kind of saw what was happening. And also in the podcast world, which has really taken off, I think, in the last 3 years nationally.
Mm-hmm.
But when we record our first podcast in 2009 or 10, like it was shortly
it was
after
before
you started.
That. We did.
Oh, we didn't
want to
be. We did. That's right. But we started on Fnatic.
We started it on KMA.
That's right.
Bloom and I actually. This is
about that.
We were Cyclone free agents at the time.
Yep.
A lot of people don't know this. I worked for Paul Clark for like 2 years. But Bloom and I when we were at KMA there towards the end, we were free agents. And we started our own, like...
And we called it a podcast. Yeah, I don't know if we called it a podcast, but we had an audio blog.
An audio blog. That's where we would just turn on the mics and we would talk about the Cyclones.
Yep. That's funny. That But it just, it's interesting. So I think it happened at a great time, and then you've built up credibility. And it's weird almost that, you know, I'll go around and see Iowa State folks all over the country, and you know, I almost think Fanatic has now more credibility as the fan site than some of the traditional media.
I hope
so. Which is kind of neat. It's funny how it's flipped.
Yeah,
in a way.
It's nothing against the traditional media, but I do feel like we've done this the right way. I feel like we didn't really cut corners. I was far more of a traditional journalist in 2010 than I am now. Now I'm more of a and that's fine. That's why I had the Rob Grays and stuff. But I think that, you know, we've never been a mouthpiece for the university, and we never will be. That's important to me.
And that part has changed, too, what the university has to do, because their responsibility is to control their message.
In 2005, they blocked me. Iowa State blocked me from covering the Big 12 women's basketball tournament.
That's right.
I had to buy a ticket to cover that event in Dallas. Swear to God that happened.
Yep. I remember that.
It was a whole deal.
Yeah, but I think
it probably had more to do with Narcisse at the time than it did me, but
it
still happened.
You.
That wasn't Saquon Fanatic, but that was when I was with Scout.
But I think the growth of the Iowa State fan base, it ties into this, the media coverage, and now you're selling out a stadium that's 61,500. You have more interest in Iowa State than at any other time in the history of the school, and it's set up now, Iowa State is, for good things ahead. And good news for Fanatic is you're right there. Like, you are the entity that's been there. I mean, you and Randy Peterson have probably been, and Paul Clark, okay, have been probably been.
Well, let's be, Paul's really, he doesn't do much anymore.
Yeah, but,
like, the site's still there.
Sure. But I think.
We don't see much of him, which is.
In the day-to-day stuff.
I like
yeah.
Paul a lot.
But I think it's wild that you've now been around 15 years, and I'm curious what you think the next 10 years will look like, because obviously, like we talked about to start, from a TV network standpoint, that's going to be a big issue when that's up. Okay, what's going to happen there? I think that's the biggest question for media. And then from a local coverage standpoint, if newspapers continue to go the same way, I mean, what does it become even more splintered off? And fascinating to think about.
Hold that thought. I want to give a shout out real quick. We are partnering. I'm excited about this, Bloom, and perhaps I can get you to go here with me. July 25th through the 27th, the Guthrie River Ruckus. Have you ever heard of this?
Oh, yeah. Who's singing?
Oh. You ever heard of Chris Cagle? My man, Chris Cagle.
I'm not a
country Diamond
guy.
Rio, Kip Moore, Mitchell Tenpenny. So we're partnering with them this year. So if you go. Oh,
Tenpenny sang the Sober song.
Oh, is that? Okay.
Yeah.
I'm not much aware
I
of Mitchell's
so.
Work.
Yeah, yeah.
But anyways, if you go this year, we're sponsoring them, and you're going to see like Cyclone Fanatic.
That's awesome.
Logos and stuff all over the big screen behind like Chris Cagle.
Seriously.
Yeah. Very excited for this. And great news for Cyclone Fanatics who want to go, I can get you $15 off tickets. How do you like that? So you go to GuthriesRiverRuckus.com. That's GuthriesRiverRuckus.com. And use the code word Cyclones when you buy your tickets. $15 discount. Boom. GuthriesRiverRuckus.com. Code word Cyclones. What is the future like
so,
in media?
So this is why I ask this. And I'm not trying to rain on the future of your coverage. But I do, and I know it's something you thought about and we've talked about. But you have now, like, just to start, Iowa State gets enough money from the big conference network package and then the third tier rights. They could sustain themselves pretty much on that. They need the local media to generate interest, of course. But I do think it's that part has changed in that what is the local media's responsibility then? Because they control all their own content now. Look at it. Cyclones TV, okay. Look at the stories that the sports information department puts out. I mean, it puts
Walters.
Out. They're covering Iowa State like they are a media outlet.
As so, they should.
So where do you see the third parties of the world, you, fitting into that along with the traditional media? Because I think, I mean, look at what Iowa State's done. Look at what Drake just hired, a guy, an admirer who was a former TV person, to do what Iowa State's doing. I think that's the model for these schools going forward. I'm just curious, where do you think you fit in that and the role you have to play?
Well, the first thing I would point out is I don't really separate like traditional media and what we do anymore. I think you throw us all together.
Okay.
Now, we serve different purposes. And you'll never hear me tell people to not subscribe to the Des Moines Register. I want everybody to subscribe to the Des Moines Register because I think it's vitally important for our local community. Same with the Ames Tribune. I encourage people for Christmas gifts to give subscriptions to the local media because we need people. We need a Travis Hines checking the police blotter.
Mm-hmm.
That's important. We need whoever's at the Register covering the city council. Like, it's vital for our democracy, okay? So I think we all have a spot at the table. I know this wasn't your opinion, but the way you set the table there, I think you're vastly underestimating people's craving for real analysis and objective analysis and reporting.
And I agree. That's why I went way hard the other way.
Yeah, because I think that human beings can spot a press release from a mile away. And while I think that maybe 20% of the fan base would be fine with just reading press releases all the time, I think that there's a hard reject coming from 80% of Cyclone fans who not only do they want like the objectiveness and they want some flavor to it. It's entertainment. Like, people go to Cyclone games because they love it. They're not reading Cyclone Fanatic on a Tuesday morning because they feel obligated to. They're doing it and they're listening to these podcasts. Like, how many people right now, raise your hand in your car, keep two hands on the wheel, if you're doing this for entertainment purposes to pass the time? Content is king. We're going to continue to find new ways to bring it to you. We're going to be doing a lot of these podcasts that you listen to now. You're going to be able to watch live on Facebook coming up here in about a month or so. We're about ready to launch the new Cyclone Fanatic app. So when there's a recruit that commits to Iowa State, it's going to buzz you on your Apple Watch.
Yep.
This is all going to continue to evolve. And while you're right, Iowa State's been doing this for a long time, though.
Yeah.
Like, they've been controlling their own stuff for a long time, and the media hasn't gone anywhere. I don't think it will ever. They're never going to be able to report on recruiting.
And I don't think Iowa State would want that either.
I don't either.
Yeah. I mean,
And that's the recruiting thing is another thing. It's the lifeblood of what we do, and we don't do it as well as we should. I'm just a really honest assessment of our website. We need to be better in that area to really thrive going forward.
Mm-hmm.
It's got to be a deal where, like, when you look at, like, what can we do better than everybody else? Halstead is phenomenal at recruiting. I've been in the game for 15 years. I don't think anybody's covered it better than what Alex has done over at 247. I would highly advise anybody to pay him $5 a month or whatever it is for a subscription. The podcast thing is just going to continue to grow. I don't take the fatalist approach. I think there's so much opportunity going forward. Iowa State's fan base is going to continue to grow.
It is.
And there's plenty of room at the dinner table for anybody. And I can tell you, when you look at our numbers on the website, podcast numbers, and sports talk radio ratings, we just had the best book that we've ever had.
Awesome.
So
You're not going anywhere.
My point is, I think that people are craving it more than ever, and I can't see that going away anytime soon.
Well, and I think that's, you know, to kind of put a bow on it, that's the neat part is, Iowa State has grown. Fan base, success, Fanatic has grown. I think they do mirror each other in that way, but I also think the best
We do better when they do better.
Oh, completely.
Yeah,
your numbers reflect that. But I think for Iowa State, it's a great time to be a fan in a couple of ways. You've got coverage that you've never had before on all angles. Every single game is televised.
Yeah. It's never been better to be a fan.
It really isn't. And then the success on the field is obviously the most important thing.
And if you don't like me, you can
read
Randy Peterson.
Yeah,
if you don't like Peterson, you can read Travis Hines.
It is so cool. Let's rewind 20 years ago. you're an Iowa State football fan. You get to watch one, maybe two games a year. You listen to the games. A lot of them are ugly. You read them. You read the paper the next day. You watch the 10 o'clock news, and you get maybe a 10-second blurb, and Iowa gets a minute and a half. And now, you want to go find media coverage for Iowa State? You got it. It's everywhere. Every single game is televised in one capacity or another. I know Cyclones TV sometimes gets some gruff for the lack of, but at least it's on TV, which is pretty cool. And everything's at your fingertips, which it's a great time to be an Iowa State fan.
Look at the Register
there too. Yeah,
two beat writers for Iowa, two for Iowa State.
Yeah, and you can argue with the methods that they do, but they still, the coverage is there. I mean, and literally, you guys have content every single day, even during the summer.
We try and have a podcast every day of the week,
and so I think from that, it's really cool. And there's a reason why Iowa State has caught Iowa from a fan base. I really believe that now. If you can look at alumni numbers and all that stuff, but I think from a general interest standpoint, it used to be probably, well, I'll just take my kindergarten class for example. I was like me and two other people in my 30-person kindergarten class in West Des Moines were Iowa State fans. Now you go to that same elementary school in West Des Moines, it's 50-50, if not an Iowa State lean, I think that in Des Moines. And I think the coverage of Iowa State is a big part of that. Yeah, the success is obviously the ultimate part, but the coverage has grown the Iowa State fan base, and that's only going to get better. I think at some point, because of the way the alumni numbers and everything else trend, it's going to be 50-50 for the foreseeable future.
I want to give credit to Iowa State's, really their marketing, though.
Yeah.
And when I say that, it goes everywhere from Pollard and Mary Pink to, you know, like Mike Green with Sports Information. For so long there, Iowa State was giving media exponentially more access to its programs than Iowa was. And that was really smart because you had consistently Cyclone. Like, I remember, like, we're loosely affiliated with Hawkeye Nation. We're not owned by the same, but we're two independent websites, and it's easier to work together.
Yep.
And I remember there talking with Rob Howe for years. Like, I had a new spring football story every day.
And they had like one opportunity.
And he had like one or two opportunities all of spring football to talk to coaches. And that was really smart by Iowa State because, you know, we were keeping fans abreast on everything on a daily basis, where over on the eastern part of the state, they had nothing. And it's all feeding the beast. And another thing, too, is Iowa State fans are so damn loyal. And if you guys like the coverage, and if you got to support you got to turn off your ad blockers. If you enjoy the products, don't pay for something you don't like.
Yep.
But if you enjoy the products, you can subscribe to Alex's website. You can subscribe to the Register, to the Tribune. You can give those
support,
as gifts.
Support Fanatic Advertiser. That's a big part of it too.
That's the biggest thing. I had a meeting with an advertiser today, and they're going to double their spend with us next year because we're the number one referral they've ever had. And this is a real company. This is a company that's been around for decades. They've advertised in every form, and they've never had more referrals than from Cyclone Fanatic. And that's why we're here. So if you love it, like, you got to continue to support. Yeah. This type of deal.
And I think that's the neat part, is this website started to serve the Iowa State fan base, and it continues to do so 10 years later. So kudos to you and what you've done. I know you won't take credit for it, but you obviously are a big part of it. But it's neat to see that hard work has paid off. And by the way, the Iowa State, the success, is particularly the last couple of years in football, it's kind of that. Not that you have anything to do with it, but it's nice for you to be able to cover now. Well, we always talked about it, right?
Never back
thought
when
it was we were at
possible.
Cyclone Nation, that we never thought we would cover an Alamo Bowl or an Iowa State team that is a legitimate Big 12 contender. And now, look at Iowa State. Every single game is going to be on television, which, you know, is small potatoes now. But Iowa State's a big boy. It's a national player, and the media's there to cover it.
One other thing, too, is I kind of mentioned this earlier, but I'm the visible one, but our ownership with, like, they just, I mention this every time we have our parties and stuff. Like, they never told me no back in the day. And back when nobody was podcasting and I said, hey, can I have $500 to buy this Audacity. Remember that board that always used to die on us?
It did. It did.
But, like, you know, they would do that. And also Jamie Pollard. A lot of ADs wouldn't have. But Paul, I think him and the way he viewed, and he used us from time to time. Like, I get it. Like, it was.
Sure. It was a symbiotic relationship.
Yeah. No, but, like, I think he was so open about all this stuff. And he. I'm going to write the book someday. I don't know how many people are going to buy it. But on the Big 12 missile crisis and the Longhorn Network and all that stuff. And my gut tells me that Iowa State's athletic director was probably much more involved in all that than people give him credit for.
Indeed. And now it's, I mean, looking at.
And he's hired the right coaches in the sense that they haven't always won. But if he understands this fan base and what this fan base needs more than winning. Winning is great and it cures everything. But, like, they've got to be able to give back to the people.
The right people in place, yeah.
It's a weird deal. I would venture to guess you could travel from coast to coast and not find a fan base like Iowa State's. It's an odd deal. We are a weird group of folks, but it's a great group of folks.
It's a great – and, man, and not a better time than right now and from a lot of aspects. So,
well, I hope
10 years in and Fanatic, maybe we can cover our first Big 12 championship game.
Man, I would – maybe I probably would. I would definitely cover that game. You can't keep me out of the press box, but it'd be really fun to
go
sit there
a fan.
And hold my daughter and watch that experience too.
Hey, I'm not putting it out of the realm this year for sure. Good stuff though.
Well, believe it or not, we're recording this Tuesday night. We'll probably put this out closer to the 4th, but in less than 2 weeks, Big 12 Media Days. Can you believe that?
And you'll be there.
I can't wait. This is so weird. People probably won't get it. It's my favorite event to cover every year because it's just like everything's fresh, everything's new, and I can sit down for 2 days and all I do is produce content and about Iowa State football.
It's like back in the old days when you first started.
I know.
You and nobody else.
I told Stansberry the other day, what did I say to him? I was like, God, I wish I had your job. But it's true. Like, if I could just sit down and write 5 stories about the Cyclones every day like I used to, God, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, you mean you were calling Deontay Garrett at all hours of the day and all that stuff.
The best one I called that I remember calling up on and developing a relationship with, what was his he played with LeBron at the Cavs. He went to Texas. Tristan Thompson.
There you go.
He was an Otzelberger guy.
And all the stories, but that's cool. I mean, it's neat that you've kind of been along for the ride, and you know I've kind of seen it from closely, and just the growth of.
Well, you are our biggest acquisition.
Oh yeah,
you.
Yeah,
I mean, those. You sold a lot of Iowa State dailies back in the day, Bloom. Those columns were legendary.
You brought
the Bill Simmons vibe to the Iowa State Daily.
It was painful.
What about the one time, didn't you have like Iowa fans coming to your apartment?
I had calls to somebody posted my email, my campus email address and phone number on the Iowa message board. We can wrap it up here, but I wrote in the column, this was after Iowa had struggled with multiple running back injuries. And so I wrote in the column, here's going to be my this timestamps it. Here's what I'm going to do for my AOL Instant Messenger this week. This week at the Cy-Hawk game. Iowa running backs blow ACLs, which is just a horrible thing to
it's
say.
It's a bad joke.
But I wrote it in a column, and it got printed, and I'm like, oh, gosh. But, yeah.
Who printed that? Who's your editor?
Grant Wall.
Was it Wall?
Yeah. Yeah, back in the day. So, you know what?
What about the Greg Coleman story? Tell the Greg Coleman story.
Okay, we'll just do it quickly. So I wrote. Again,
what are you trying to get out of here?
No, I'm just. I guess people are driving. Why not?
It's a podcast. So we have all the time
true.
In the world.
So not time conditioned. No. So I wrote. So Greg Coleman fumbled twice, I think, against Baylor in 05, and really lost the game. It was a bad. It was Baylor's first win on the road in Big 12 play in its history, which is kind of amazing.
That 2005 season still haunts me.
So the next week was homecoming at Iowa State, and so I wrote in my Thursday column something to the effect of, how do you keep Greg Coleman out of your yard float or your homecoming yard display? Put up goalposts? Again.
Savage.
Yeah, I mean, no, not great. And then I covered the game at Missouri the next week, and Coleman actually played well, ran for over 100 yards. And so I'm trying to get some quotes from him, and he stops me and goes, "Hey, man, read what you wrote about me in the paper. Real funny, man. Real funny." So I gave him like that awkward pat on the back. Like, "Oh, Greg, we're cool, right?" And then you, of course, can read up on his history.
I once had a football staffer want to beat me up in the McCartney years. I'm not going to say his name because he's still in the area.
Yeah. No, I mean,
it was about, all I'll say is this. It had to do with the recruitment of Webster Patrick.
Oh, boy.
I think
we've told that in one of these before.
Yeah, but to this day, I stand by my reporting on that.
Point is, the McCartney staff were correct on us a little bit.
Oh, like, yeah.
What the hell were we doing?
They were skeptical of
covering
us.
A Big 12 football program. We had no business doing that.
So
we've grown up since then, right?
I don't think I've ever told this story. And real quick, I'm going to, if there's kids, I'm going to swear here. But yeah, it's not nothing egregious.
Okay.
So I was doing that State of the Nation show with John Miller and Steve Dace on MediaCom.
Yep.
And we were on there. We were doing like our preseason predictions. And I want to say I picked the 2006 team to go like 4-8 or whatever.
Yeah.
Like we picked a pretty big drop off, and we were correct, by the way. Well, we were all sitting there. So back in the day, they used to let us watch practice.
Mm-hmm.
And they're at the end of practice, and we're all standing there waiting to talk to McCartney.
Mm-hmm.
And McCartney's just lacing into his team. Like he's just fired up. He goes, I was watching TV last night, and those three fat bastards picked us to go 4-8. And I'm like, "Hey, coach.
I was one of those guys.
I'm right here."
Oh, man.
I think Mac hated us there for a while.
No, yeah.
But then we're good now.
Yeah, no, it's all good now. But we had probably no business covering it. But
no, we really didn't.
But 15 years later, it's fun to look back on of how much everything has changed, and hopefully for the better.
Well, this was fun. I hope it was somewhat educational for the audience.
I think so.
I think the ultimate message is if you everybody's got it pretty good right now. The old timers know that.
Yeah.
But man, like, I'm like you, like when people complain about like kick times and stuff because of TV, I remember the days of never being able to watch my team.
And literally, Iowa State exists because of
the Longhorn Network.
Of TV.
I mean, it can go
it
back
really
to that.
It really is. So.
Yeah. So don't bitch about the Longhorn Network either. All right. Thank you to our friends at Sukup Manufacturing.
Thank you. Thank you to them as well.
And it's great. We love all of our sponsors. It's good to have a supporter like Sukup, though. They're all over everywhere at Iowa State, and it's nice to know that some of those people care about what we're doing here.
Indeed.
As well. So thanks for listening. Have a very safe 4th. If you're going to have some parties with your, you know, fireworks and stuff, just don't be an idiot. Thank you. Later.